Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
Without further ado, Iceman Insights, starring the Dirty D and the Shocker. Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com. How you doing tonight, Michael?
Well, I'm all right. My voice, not so much.
I have to stop you right now. We have breaking news.
Oh?
Yes. I have decided that I'm going to take it upon myself to track everyone as they jump off the Evansville Iceman bandwagon and have given up officially on the season.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with Rick Llewellyn. Sunday evening, Rick Llewellyn officially off the bandwagon. He took his taters and went home, gathered up his taters, and he is done with the Evansville Iceman hockey season. He's given up on the playoff push. So all of you continue to contact me via Facebook, or I will peruse the 7 active Iceman fan sites on Facebook, because we all can't get along. And I will be keeping a list of at what point you give up on the season. So, are you officially giving up on the season, Michael Shockley?
Am I giving up on the season?
Yes. Are you going to say officially that the Icemen are done?
As in, right
not
now,
going
I'm
to make
calling
the playoffs.
It, we're not making the playoffs.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah.
But that doesn't mean you've stopped being a fan or anything
correct.
Like that.
Right.
Okay.
I'll still support the team. I'll still hope that something happens. But just looking at what we're up against at this point and the schedule that's remaining, I don't like our chances one bit.
So anyways, I had to cut you off there with that breaking news about Rick Llewellyn and his taters.
His departed taters.
His departed
his
taters.
His dearly departed taters.
But I got to tell you, when someone leaves, jumps off the bandwagon, he does it with a style like no other. Putting the sporks on the Jumbotron at the Ford Center.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, you know, I don't know that that was necessarily... I don't think that was him jumping off the bandwagon. That was him saying that everyone else is jumping off the bandwagon.
Well, he can clarify if he wants. Yeah. But as far as I'm concerned, he's A number one. He jumped off
he's
with
the Pied
11...
Piper.
Yeah, he's the Pied Piper. He jumped off at the 11-game left mark.
Yeah. Well, considering last year at the 11-game left mark, we were mathematically eliminated.
At the 11-game into the season mark, we were pretty much eliminated.
Yeah.
So anyways, how you doing?
As people have figured out by now, my voice is a little funky.
Oh, I got the big bass on you, so you actually sound pretty good.
I sound pretty good?
Yep.
Do I sound like Barry White?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, let's get it on.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy since we're both alone here in the Wire Studios.
Yeah. Okay. So, anyway.
Since
our last show, the Icemen went 1-3-0. Friday night against Orlando, things started off well with a 7-1 victory. Dalton Levier, 2 goals and 2 assists. Alex Aliardi, 2 goals and 1 assist. Dylan Clark had a goal and assist. Garrett Bartis, 35 saves in net. And as we
and
expected.
Big saves, too.
Yeah, he played really well. And as we expected, that was a very chippy game.
Duco.
Yeah. It belongs to your beloved Toronto Marlies, correct?
Yes, he does.
I'd still like to know how you instigate a fight and be the aggressor in a fight and get out without having an instigator or an aggressor in the...
He still earned 14 minutes.
Yeah.
And effectively took him out of the game.
Yeah.
And I don't think he really threw any shots, so I was cool with it. As a referee, when a situation like that happens, if the guys aren't actually fighting, it's kind of hard to call it a fight. So if the guy kind of turtles, and I'm not saying that Aliardi turtled, but he wasn't going to throw a punch because he wanted the power play or whatever.
Right.
There was no reason for him to throw a punch, and I'm fine with that. But I have a hard time giving someone a fighting major when it's not a fight.
So if he, because he wasn't just out and out throwing haymakers, But if he does that, you'd give him the fight?
Yeah, if it's
you,
a situation...
If you drop him and throw punches, you've got to get a major.
Well, the thing is, if he is connecting with thrown punches because the other guy, whether he wants to fight or not, is just getting pummeled, yeah, I'm giving a fighting major. But if a guy goes instantly into the cover and the other guy's just upset and he throws two or three or four punches and they just glance off of helmets and stuff like that, I just would rather just give it the minor and the 10-minute misconic.
And move on.
Yep.
I think you just like him because he was a member of your beloved Toronto.
No, I would be free with anyone. But, boy, he ripped one off on Saturday, missed the net. But I liked what I saw out of Duco. Not so much about Ross. So he was another Toronto Marley. And Analoski, too, is another one.
Thus conclude your Toronto Marley's report here on Iceman Insights.
I walked into the locker room on Friday, and I said, so are Ross and Duco playing? And the assistant coach said, well, we're not sure, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, no, I'm just teasing with you. I was pretending not to give you information. There should be in the lineup. I said, dude, I want to see him. I'm a Leaf fan. I want to see him and watch him play well. And he's like, I'm a Leaf fan too, Leaf Nation. So we're fist bumping and everything else. So yeah, it was a Leaf love fest in there. It was awesome.
Well,
can't get it from my own hockey club. My own head coach Jeff Pyle and Matt Krug and the rest of them tease me all the time. I had three fellow Leaf fans. Head coach Jeff Pyle purposely released all of them. Tom Zanoski, Sawyer Hanna, and Jason Dale purposely removing Leafs fans from off the roster.
I think that
just
shows
spite me.
I think that shows perfectly sound judgment, if you ask me.
Well, regardless, let's go. Since our last show,
yeah,
because we're already 6 minutes in.
Saturday, the Iceman played Orlando again, and the Solar Bears got revenge with a 5-2 victory. That was a game decided by special teams. Orlando scored twice on the power play in only three chances, and they had a shorthanded goal on a really bad Matt Shepke turnover. And then it just got worse on Sunday against Florida, a 6-3 loss, two more power play goals against, and breakdowns aplenty. We gave up two goals on two-on-ones, another goal on a defensive zone breakdown that left a guy all alone in the slot.
That blewed off, because we haven't seen him skate all over us all year long.
and then gave up a goal on a fluky bounce from behind the goal line. That's just one of those nights. And then it continued on Tuesday, a 3-2 loss to the Everblades.
After we hit three posts.
Yeah, pretty good effort, really, in general. Yep. I thought the team played pretty well, just one turnover, one D-zone breakdown, and then another power play goal was the game winner. Just like that, a weekend that started with so much promise with a lopsided victory over a really good team turns into three straight losses, and the Icemen are now 27, 25, and 10 for 64 points. Still 10th place in the East. We are 3 points behind the Fort Wayne Comets.
Suck.
Thank you. They are in 9th, but they have two games in hand on us. And Florida is now up to 8th in the conference. They have 69 points with one game in hand on us. So,
yeah, those are bad numbers.
Yeah, those are not good numbers.
No, I am not giving up yet. I really think that I really wanted to go 4-2 on this homestand, and that's, you got to keep things in perspective. What did you want to go on this 6-game homestand, except for the fans that expect to win all 14 games remaining in the season? So kicking them aside, I really wanted to go 4-2. We still have an opportunity to go 3-3, which isn't optimal, but it isn't bad.
Optimal?
Is that not right?
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm just impressed that you actually got that word out this time.
You've had trouble with it. So tired.
your brain works better when you're tired.
I think so. Uh-huh. And the biggest thing I think is we're still waiting for the big four to get healthy and in game shape.
Yeah,
Beaulieu, Sakaris, Moon, and King.
Yeah,
and if they can get healthy and get back to the way they were playing in January before they got injured, we were going to make a run on the road trip. I'm not worried about the road trip that much. It's how soon can we get some points going before we get on that road trip when we only got two games left.
And yeah, and by the time we do get it going, is it too late?
Yep,
that's going to be the question. So yeah, that's where things stand, and I don't really have anything else on the four games over this past week, so we'll move on.
The Orthopedic Associates Injury and Transaction Report.
It was a chaotic week.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Last Wednesday was the AHL trade deadline. Last Thursday
you have
was the...
no idea how much paperwork I had to do in 2 days. What a nightmare. And you also do not know, nor will you ever know, how many players were possibly coming here.
Possibly, but yes. Didn't.
With trades and everything else and trying to work things around and blah, blah, blah. And head coach Jeff Pyle, who's always on his phone, really burned it up. It was unbelievable.
Hmm. AHL deadline was Wednesday. The ECHL deadline was Thursday. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that happened. So
let me premise this first.
Okay.
When we went to Elmira Reading 2 weekends ago, mm-hmm. head coach Jeff Pyle, after we won in Cincy, said, I am going to make moves. This is your weekend to show me that you deserve to be on this club. And then we went 0-3. So, continue.
Yeah. So that's the preface to this.
Yes.
All right, so first off, we talked about this last week, but I'm revisiting it because we've actually seen the guy we got play. Luke Oakley was traded to South Carolina for rookie defenseman Zach Curry. He made his debut over the weekend, has played all 4 games since he joined the team.
Alum of Quinnipiac,
yes.
With Lauren Barron.
Exactly. I thought he looked decent, few sloppy moments, but then again, on
he's
this team.
He's getting better and better.
Who hasn't had sloppy moments on this team lately?
Yep.
So,
including myself when I spilled my coffee tonight before the start of the game.
Yeah, that's a... yeah. Oh, yeah, by the way, we're recording this on Tuesday night after the game.
Yes.
So I thought Curry looked pretty decent, but, he's a rookie. He's going to have his off moments here and there. But in general, I thought with a defensive defenseman, and that's what he is, more or less, with a defensive...
You think so? I think he's total offense defenseman.
You think so?
Oh, he's really pushing the puck. He was just getting comfortable those first couple of games. I think he really pushes the puck. He's only 5'11", 185.
Well, that's true. Is he really that big? I thought he was listed even less than that.
No, that's league stat.
Ah, okay. In general, with defensemen, a lot of times, if you notice them,
yep,
it's in a bad way. So a lot of times if you go a game and you don't notice them, it's okay. They were doing their job. It's like referees. If you don't notice them, that means they were doing okay.
Or wives.
You can send your letters to Derek Benigni, care of the couch.
Exactly. You can vacuum my floor and make my dinner, and you don't have to make a noise. It's really not that difficult.
Wow.
Daddy's watching the hockey game.
Okie dokie. We'll move on.
Thank you.
Riley Grantham traded to Toledo for future considerations, which turned out to be the reassignment of AHL Grand Rapids Griffins property in the form of Toledo forward Kevin Lynch.
Second-round draft pick of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
He has played all 4 games since joining the team, scored his first goal with the Icemen on Friday.
Yep.
And I thought he's looked really good.
Yep, I like him a lot, too.
Dustin Hoffner released, then re-signed due to the Matt Krug suspension on Friday night. He played Friday night, but then left the game late in that game with a conky and is out indefinitely.
Indeed. Scary that, moment.
That really
there.
Was.
And good work by both therapists, because the athletic trainer from Orlando also came out on the ice as well. Dustin's doing fine, but... he's got a little bit, right now, the short-term memory. He doesn't even remember most of the game and everything else. So
yeah.
It's gonna take a little time for him to come back.
That's scary stuff. When they were hauling him off the ice, he was totally out of it. I mean, there was like no response at all to what was going on around him. So, it was really scary. And anytime a bear head hits the ice with impact, it's... it could be really bad, especially depending on where exactly on the head that it hits. Hopefully he'll get back to being okay eventually, but that's going to be a process because that was indeed a scary moment. Also on defense, Jacob Johnston out for the rest of the regular season, needs wrist surgery. I was told it's the same issue he's kind of been dealing with all season, that it was basically a re-flaring up of the issue that had him out at the start of the season?
That's not what I understand, but it happened. Both injuries occurred at the same time, and he couldn't do any further damage to the one. So he played through it this entire season, and it just got so bad that he couldn't deal with the pain anymore.
Gotcha. So another defenseman bites the dust. Also, Mike Seidel sent to Gwinnett to complete the Antoine Corbin trade. That had been Corbin for future considerations.
I'm a huge fan of Antoine Corbin. Not that I didn't like Mike Seidel, but You got to pay. you got to pay to get things.
You got to give something to get something. That's what they say out on Ferris Avenue.
Yes, indeed.
We're
hitting up next.
Yeah. As our post-game party continues. Let's get it on.
Jeremy. Get your hands off my pink flamingo.
Wow. That's for later. That's for after the show.
Anyways, Jeremy Langlois.
Jeremy Langlois, this one hurt. Recalled by Springfield, traded to the Bridgeport Sound Tigers for a defenseman that the Falcons were in need of. That really hurts losing Langlois. And Curry, who we previously mentioned, took his number 27 from one Quinnipiac product to another. So my question for you is, how many times did you see 27 on the ice this weekend and accidentally start to call him Langlois?
A few. I actually mentioned it one time. I think it was Saturday night. I said, I almost said Langlois. But I didn't do it once this time. So yeah. I was pretty excited about
coming
that.
Along.
Now, what really is tough is doing Orlando and then doing Florida because Orlando is in Florida.
Very good.
That one is tough to differentiate. So, and it's weird to go by a state. Yeah. Are they the only team that does a state? I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
South Carolina.
Okay. So, but yeah, that one's tough.
That might be the only other one.
And I think if I would have done Florida 3 weeks ago, then Orlando, it wouldn't have been a problem. But you do them back-to-back at home, and it gets tough.
Yeah. Then out west, there's Alaska.
Yep.
And there's Ontario. You know, they're from the province of Ontario.
Yes, exactly.
So anyway, Langlois is in the AHL. They didn't trade for him and then send him back to the ECHL. Actually, their ECHL affiliate is the Stockton Thunder, coached by Rich Crum.
Exactly, because it's part of the New York Islanders family. And kudos to Springfield. They let Pyle know. They're making a big push. You know, Columbus has been in the playoffs once in their entire career. Springfield, great team last year. They get booted in the second round. They got to make a showing, or else people are going to lose their jobs. So
they're going.
They weren't purposely screwing us over, but they called coach and said we need a defenseman. We got an offer on the table, and there's a chance that they want Langlois. So, and it happened to be that way.
Well, at least they got something they can use immediately out of it. You know, with the Joe Lavin trade, they got futures.
Yeah,
and that's a little harder to swallow.
And that one doesn't make any. Yeah, and because that's what coach kept saying was,
well, if you need a defenseman, what do you do with Joe Lavin?
Exactly. So that one didn't make any sense at all.
So, but the good thing for Langlois is he's getting a shot at the next level. He has played all three games for Bridgeport since the trade. And on Sunday, they beat the Worcester Sharks 5-4. In that game, Langlois had two goals, including the game winner, one assist, and was +3. He was named the number one star of the game in just his third game with the team. So awesome for him. We have discussed him before and more or less came to the agreement that he's probably the best all-around player that we've ever seen wear an Iceman uniform.
Yep.
So my question for you is, now that he's probably played his last game in an Iceman uniform, at least for the foreseeable future, will we ever see Jeremy Langlois play in an NHL game?
Man, I don't know. It's a tough one. I got to tell you, recently I've been wondering if Matt Lowry, who is a little bit bigger and a little bit grittier, if he might make it before Langlois does. So I am not sure. I don't know how to answer that.
I think the thing that makes it difficult is in the NHL, you know, they almost all the teams are structured to have three skilled scoring lines and one energy line. And a lot of times those borderline, well, some teams.
Unless you're the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah. A lot of times,
knuckleheads, and then Dion Phaneuf and his other knuckleheads.
Yeah, who knocks out his own teammates?
Oh my goodness!
So you know those swing spots between the NHL and the AHL a lot of times end up being taken by guys who are more fitted to that fourth line energy line kind of role. And to your point, I think Lowry is probably more suited for that role. If Langlois was to get a shot, you would want him on a scoring line.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, can he ever impress enough to get a shot in that kind of role? Yep. And I don't know, because there's only so many jobs to go around.
Yep. He still is young, though. He's still 22.
Yeah.
So.
He's a rookie. That's the thing. Yeah. As good as he's been, we forget he's a rookie. This is his first pro year. So if he plays well enough, maybe he earns another AHL contract next year and stays in the A all year. Yep. And if he does well enough there, who knows?
Well, and you want to talk about one of the good organizations to be in, the New York Islanders, a.k.a. a bad organization. But there's an opportunity. Right. There's a lot of playing spots up there on the aisle.
Yeah, you're more likely to work your way up on a bad NHL team than on a good NHL team. Because on a good NHL team, the only way you're going to get up there is injuries. And that could be the way that it happens, too. Yep. You know, I'm not asking if he's going to play 10 full NHL seasons. I'm asking if he's going to play one game.
Yep.
And if he were to do that, that would make him, in theory, the first Iceman player to ever make it to the NHL after playing for the Iceman. So I think it's possible. I wouldn't count on it, but I think he certainly has the skill to work at that level, at least in the short term. But I don't know if he'll ever get the opportunity.
Yeah.
But I do think, yes, being in the Islanders organization now probably gives him a better opportunity than being in the Blue Jackets organization, just because I think the Blue Jackets are further along in their development at the NHL level, so there's going to be less opportunities there.
And you know who's coaching that Bridgeport team?
Who?
Eric Boganicki. Do you remember him?
Really? Yeah. Former St. Louis
He's
Blue?
He's the assistant coach, and
He played for a bunch of NHL teams.
Yes. But, yeah, he was the St. Louis Blues, and Scott Pellerin is the head coach.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
Another Blue.
Wow.
Former Blues player.
I did not know that.
Yep.
You're just full of information.
It's like I do this for a job or something.
Hmm.
It's crazy.
In other news, Mike Clemente was recalled by Springfield to serve as their backup on Friday and Saturday because their number two goalie, Jeremy Smith, had sustained a minor injury in practice.
You didn't hear that from me.
Why do you say that?
I called
that?
Springfield because I had to do some other work with them.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, what's going on with Clemente getting called up? Because it was right around the AHL deadline. I'm like, you guys didn't trade
Better him. Not be trading him.
Jeremy Smith, did you? And they're like, well, we're not allowed to talk about this because Coach doesn't want to talk about this. But there may have been a minor incident at practice with a potential goaltender minorly getting injured, and we just want to cover our bases.
Ah. Well, the
and I was sworn to secrecy. So, hence, I'm putting it out on my radio show.
Yeah, very good. The information ended up coming out on the Springfield Republican newspaper. They had a thing that was kind of recapping all the deadline moves that they made.
Better than that. Me.
Yeah. So we're just passing along what Springfield said.
Yes. You are passing along.
You're just not commenting.
Exactly.
Gotcha. And then, after their games on Friday and Saturday, Clemente was back with the Iceman on Sunday, played on Sunday and Tuesday. In happy news, Josh Beaulieu and Nathan Moon both returned from their injuries on Friday. They had both missed 19 games. What'd you think on how they looked?
Rusty.
Yeah, I think Moon maybe looked a little better than Bo, but I thought they both, the effort was there. It was just, it's just rust. And then Peter Sakaris and Tristan King both returned from their injuries on Sunday. Both of them had missed 18 games. Thoughts?
Rusty.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just, and even King looked worse tonight. And that's the same thing that I think that happened to Beaulieu and Moon is you're in the lineup, you got the adrenaline going that first game. And, we win 7-1, and then the body just can't magically bounce back. It's not Xbox hockey, Ryan Huff. So so you could tell, same with Kevin Lynch, too. He comes in, he scores that goal, he plays a great game Friday night, and then all of a sudden the fact that he drove down from Toledo and everything else, and it all catches up to you on Saturday. So, and I think you saw the same thing with Tristan King, who played pretty solid, I thought, on
Sunday,
and then you saw him mishandle the puck.
Which
more time, More times tonight than we've seen in a week, and it just the body just doesn't magically bounce back like that. So
yeah, I don't know if everyone tempered their expectations for when the guys came back.
I doubt it.
You think they're going to come back and everything's going to be this magical turnaround?
And they're still going to score 40 goals and blah blah blah.
You know, the problem is these guys, whether we want to remember this or not, these guys are human.
Yeah,
they're not robots. They're not super cyborgs. They're human.
Stella,
and it's going to take time.
Stefan Delarovere is a cyborg.
Well, that cyborg got a little short-circuiting at the hands of Matt Krug the other night.
He's still running around, though.
Yeah.
I had Ryan Gary in the box with me. I'm like, what the hell did you do to him? He hates us.
Well, he wasn't here for long.
He's 12 games. Enough to hate us, man.
Apparently, Well, and I was telling, I can't remember who I was telling, but I was telling somebody, your only teammates when you still have the same logo on your jersey. When that logo becomes different, you're not teammates anymore.
Nope,
you move on.
You still got to play the same way.
Yeah.
All right, we're at 25 minutes already.
We'll move along to the next thing. Matt Shepke sat out Sunday's game. He has been playing through some injury issues, but was officially a healthy scratch. Any story behind that?
Yes.
Is it coach's decision?
No. There is a story behind it. I am not talking about
You are not talking about it.
Nope.
All right. But
Stay tuned.
He was officially a healthy scratch, correct?
Yes.
Okay. We'll move on and tell that story another day, perhaps, after the season's over.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then the last bit of good news. The mean machine, Guy Lapine, was released by AHL Utica. He had been there for 6 weeks but played just six games. And he returned in time for the Iceman Florida game on Tuesday night. He had a bullet of a goal, which I don't know that I've ever seen him shoot the puck quite like that before.
Yeah, he had a lot of jump in his game tonight.
Yeah.
And you can just tell, you know, he got a little bit of, granted, he only played six games, but the practices and stuff too at the AHL level. And boy, he had a lot of offensive flair. I mean, yeah. he was jumping in
a little more than we've seen before. And he was clearly mad because he lost his man on Florida's second goal. And after that, he was looking to atone for it. And, boy, he did with that cannon of a shot. So,
don't think Utica did us too bad. Yeah, six games in 6 weeks. But second or third game there, he fell over, got tangled up in a corner, fell on his wrist, and sprained his wrist. So he had to miss a few games with that. Got better, got healthy, got into a fight, re-injured. Don't know if he re-injured the same one or injured the other wrist. So then he was injured again. So... yeah, that was
kind of... he was there for 6 weeks, but not healthy for the whole season.
Right, yep. Anytime, 24-7, you can go to IcemanManiacs.com and click on the red graphic to visit the Maniac message board for the updated roster. And hopefully, it just kind of rides out from here on out. I'm sure there'll be a few reserve moves and everything else, but that should be just about it.
Yeah, the Shockinator 8000 can't handle much more.
Unless we have some major... college hockey kid come free and want to play for Crom or for Crom. It's possible
luck to him in Stockton.
Yeah, exactly. Some guy. I mean, I'm sure there's some guys that want to play for Crom, so he'll do all right.
Kyle Fournette wants to play for Crom.
Talking points.
I didn't mention this last week, but I feel like I need to at least bring it up. On the March 5th pregame show, when the Icemen were in Cincinnati, during the pregame interview with Coach Pyle, my broadcast partner here asked Coach Pyle if he was able to trade me. Pyle said no due to a lack of response from other teams. Would you care to explain this conversation and what led to it?
No, I mentioned it on Iceman Live a couple of weeks ago when we were out at Beef O'Brady's, that we have a lot of fun on the road, and we just have a lot of fun. And the one thing I do, and probably because I was never professionally trained as a broadcaster, is I want to share that fun with everyone else. So when I make a recording, and we had the whole old brother we're out there thing going on for a while when we were over in Wheeling, and they had the Dapper Dan Museum, which, is, you know, Dapper Dan comes right out of that old brother. So I asked him if he was a Dapper Dan man on the radio and recorded it and then played it out in the pregame show. So we have a lot of fun. The guys work hard. Coach works hard. They're always watching video and everything else, but we have a lot of fun moments too. And I don't want to keep them as inside jokes, but I want to share it all, and then so that people can join us all enjoying all the fun that we have on the road and everything else. So we told a lot of the inside jokes at Iceman Live 3 weeks ago at Beef O'Brady's. So it was just kind of one of those knee-jerk kind of jokey things, you know, because we were coming in on the trade deadline and everything else. So I mentioned, did you get a chance to trade Shockley? And Coach is good. He always has something to come back with, so... nope, no responses. No one would answer his phone calls. So yeah.
I need a new agent.
Diminishing value there, buddy.
Apparently so. Next thing, just wanted to ask on Sunday.
Sweet Jesus.
On Sunday, during the Paws and Pucks pet adoption night, did you get a chance to listen to the Dead Dog Minute with Steven Rickard?
We were cracking up on the radio. Myself
really?
And Bill Nadeau were like, how can you ask people about their dead dogs? And especially the second period, we're down 4-1. And you would think Steven would, after the horrendous Antoine Corbin, my dog died 6 weeks ago, that he would find a different way to ask that question. No, he's going right back in there. Guns a-blazing. We're down 4-1. The season's dwindling away. Let's talk about dead dogs.
Yeah.
And it just happened to work out that my my theme for that night was Boondock Saints. Have you ever seen the movie?
I have not.
It's a classic where there's a scene where the guy kills his girlfriend's cat. So
so you started talking about that?
I did. It's one of the greatest lines in cinematic history, which is, "I killed your cat, bitch. I thought it would bring closure to our relationship." So I said that on the radios, minus the bitch thing. So, but yeah, what a just absolute Steven Rickard man with a golden pipes train wreck that was.
I was just like,
you know, we were wondering if like they're going to start bringing the dogs out on the ice and just start shooting them right there at center ice.
Well, the best part was after I don't remember which one it was, but after one of the two, like the player had just mentioned that his dog had died. And then that was the last question in the interview.
Yeah.
So then Steven finished it with, "All right, congratulations and good luck." Like, congratulations on your dead dog.
My favorite was when Steven's like, "Oh, let's give everyone the sympathy awe for their dead family pet." Wow, you cold tatered bastard.
Yeah, it's
I have all of that recorded, by the way.
Really?
Yes.
So
if you need to have an extension, I've got the whole thing recorded.
That's pretty epic.
Yep.
Okay. Well, then. So I'm glad you did get to hear that piece of wonderful entertainment. Next thing on the talking points, you posted on Twitter that last week or earlier this week or whenever the 12th was. I wrote down that it was the 12th, whatever day that was. Last week, I guess. Springfield goalie consultant and former St. Louis Blue and Detroit Red Wing and several other teams in the NHL, Manny Legacy, was at practice with the Iceman.
Yep.
I know he's been a goalie consultant for the Falcons all year, but is that the first time he's been here?
Yes, first time he's been here. Just decided to make the trip down and work with Mike Clemente and worked with him with one practice, and then Clemente promptly got called up.
Did they go up back to Springfield together?
No, Manny Legacy, real classy guy. He actually stayed in town an extra day and just worked with Bartas.
Really?
Yep.
Even though he's not AHL property.
And has nothing to do with the Springfield or anything else, but he thought, well, he talked to Pyle, and of course Pyle was fine with it.
Oh,
so, yeah, he stayed in town and shot video of Bartas and worked with him for Thursday.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And then Bartas went out and played lights out on Friday.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, but yeah, and my parents, being from Detroit, are huge Red Wing fans and everything else. So I got to call them and say, "Your granddaughter was just hanging out with Manny Legacy." So that was pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome.
So Ivy got to meet him and everything else. And that was right on the trade deadline day. And coach said, "Well, you're the assistant general manager," because I like to put a lot of titles on my name. And he's like, "Find me a goalie." And he stomped off, just having fun. And I was talking with Manny. And then coach came back, "I found you a goaltender, Manny Legacy." And he just looked at me like I was an idiot. Not coach, because that's the way he always looks at me. But Manny Legacy, I said, "Hey, if Rafalski can play for the Florida Everblades, Manny can suit it up." I said, "You said you were going to be here till Saturday anyways. You might as well play two games for us, and then Bartas can play Sunday and Tuesday."
There
you
go.
So I was really close to pulling the trigger on that one, but couldn't quite get the deal done.
You know, the reason...
Oh, and then coach said, he's like, yeah, Manny, you can play for us. We'll put you up in a hotel or everything. We'll give you 30 bucks for a meal, buddy.
Woohoo!
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure that perked his ears up.
Yeah. Well, it did perk his ears up, and then he left promptly.
You know, the reason he works for Springfield is that's actually, everybody knows him as an NHL goalie, but he actually started and ended his playing career with the Falcons.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, pretty cool. So you got to talk to him a little bit? Anything interesting?
No, just general stuff.
Chit-chat.
So he talked about practice, and he liked the up-tempo pace that they had, and he actually complimented Pyle about this and that, and Pyle just, as he usually does, just said, "Players are awesome. I tell them what to do, and they do it." So yeah, just a general hockey conversation. So.
Cool. Good stuff. All right, last talking point. The Guns N' Hoses jersey auction, which was Saturday night. You had picked the top jersey you thought would be Langlois, who ended up being gone by then. I picked Matt Krug, who ended up being tied for third, And we both thought that Clemente could get a lot, and he was also gone, so not very good. Yep. The kiss of death, apparently. The top 10 were Nathan Moon was number one at 1150.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
Kevin Lynch, after two games with the team, was second at $1,000.
Yeah, that's a little surprising. Not, I mean, he's a fantastic player, so.
But then
second. With only playing two games.
Right.
Yeah.
Matt Krug and Garrett Bartus were third at 950. Dalton Levier and the team signed jersey were next at 900. And then 850 apiece for Dylan Clark, Kellen Tochkin, Donnie Harris, and Peter Sakaris. The rest, Tyler Hines, Tristan King, Matt Lowry, Josh Beaulieu, and Matt Shepke all at 800. Antoine Corbin and Alex Aliardi at 750. And I thought that Aliardi at 750 could have been a bargain.
Yep.
when that's below average. Lauren Barron and Ryan Flanagan were next at 700. And then the bargain basement, Zach Curry, Jacob Johnston, and Alex Kangas, the backup goalie, who never even played in a game, was at $650. The total was $18,100, an average of $823. That is third best of the seven ECHL auctions we have had. So pretty
impressive.
Cool. And proceeds go to 911 Gives Hope, so that's an awesome cause. And as we've mentioned before, if you want to make a donation to 911 Gives Hope, look them up online. I think it's 911giveshope.org.
It might be.
Might be a .com.
And the boxing match is coming up mid-April as well.
Guns N' Hoses is coming up soon.
Maniac Asylum Lunatic of the Week.
All right, it's back.
It is.
First time in a while. So this is where we throw somebody under the bus for posting something insane or silly or just downright ignorant on the Maniac Asylum on Facebook.
Besides yours truly.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
Did I win Lunatic of the Week once?
No, I don't think you ever
but
have.
But you did.
You gave me. Yeah, you gave it to me once.
Well deserved.
Yeah. So I think most everyone listening to this knows that we've had a visitor recently. His name is Stuart, and he's from Scotland. And he's a fan of the Brayhead Clan and discovered the Icemen because Matt Shepke, Nathan Moon, and Mario Larocque have all played for the Clan. So,
oh, I didn't realize Mario Larocque.
Yeah, he's over there now.
So, but he also had watched Guy Lapine with Nottingham.
Yeah, he was in that same league, yes. So, so Stuart was here all weekend, went to these four games in 5 days, and he was wearing his Brayhead Clan jersey and a kilt, not to be confused with Chris Lamone.
Exactly. Yeah, indeed.
And on Saturday, he joined Stephen Rickard, the lover of dead dogs, for the pregame Let's Go Iceman chant on the Jumbotron.
And he did a fantastic job as well.
He did, very much. And then Stuart also...
He also joined me Sunday for first intermission guests.
Really?
In Media Box One.
Wow.
Yep.
How'd that go?
Oh, it was awesome. The only thing I got nervous about was my wife loves English, Scottish, Irish accents and everything else. No big deal. He's only in town for a week. Mm-hmm. So he comes up into the booth because we had worked it out that he would come up on Sunday. And then my wife, the only game she comes to all weekend long is Sunday, and she comes up to the booth. And after they left, I thought, she's going to bang him. So if I have a son,
pops out with a Scottish accent.
Yeah, 9 months from now, I don't know what I'm going to do. But anyways, enough about my whole bag wife.
I really hope she listens to this episode.
Yeah, me too.
So, Stuart, you know, one of the other many things he got to do was he got to ride the Zamboni.
That was awesome. Good thing, though, that he didn't ride the Zamboni with the kilt on.
Yeah.
Because he was authentic.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
What, did you inspect?
No, but Brian Patafi was chirping about him.
Oh,
he came
well.
To practice one day, and he's like, you're not going to go authentic. He said, dude, I'm from Scotland, or however he says it.
What was that?
My kind of fake Scottish accent. So
fake is a good word for it.
But and then the when I put him on the radio, I said, talk to us a little bit about Stuart, about being an Iceman fan. He started talking, and I stopped him. I'm like, dude, come on. I'm like, this is radio, not TV. You don't have to use this fake Scottish accent. No chicks are like going to be checking you out or anything.
I thought it was funny. He posted, after he'd been here for a few days, he posted on Facebook that Craig Ferguson sounds like he's an American trying to do a Scottish accent or something to that effect.
I think my favorite was, I'm heading downtown for a while. If you see somebody wandering lost in a purple jersey, pick a man up. He's from Scotland.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyways, Zamboni ride.
Yeah, so he took the Zamboni ride during one of the intermissions on Friday night, and Aaron Miller, who's been longing to be the Maniac Asylum Lunatic of the Week
for years.
Yeah. Before we ever even introduced this segment. Before there was an Iceman Insights, he was trying to be the Lunatic of the Week. He posted a photo with the caption, quote, "How many Lucky Charms did he give away for the Zamboni ride?" End quote. My rebuttal to that is quite simple. Lucky Charms equals Leprechaun equals Ireland does not equal Scotland.
Yes.
Geography is hard.
Geography is hard. Yeah. I knew better than to make any St. Paddy's Day comments
exactly.
or anything else. It's a whole different thing. You know, we talk about the North and the South and everything else. That's a whole different world over there.
Yeah. So there you go. Aaron Miller, our Maniac Asylum Lunatic of the Week. And kudos to Stuart for coming over. I think he had a good time. Everybody seemed to embrace him while he was here.
Yeah, he's a good
guy.
Sure.
Seems like a cool dude. I think there was a little trepidation when he first popped up on the Asylum on Facebook, and everybody was like, why is this guy in Scotland following the Evansville Iceman? And then he started talking about coming over here, and everybody was like, why is this guy traveling all the way to Evansville to see AA hockey? And then he came here, and he's really cool.
Yep. Well, and he knew Matt Shepke from back then and everything else, so he and Shepke went out to dinner one night, and he knew Nathan Moon and everything else, so there was reason for it. I want to go. I want to go back to Scotland. And go
to a clan game?
Yes, and we actually have longtime family friends that live in Scotland
really?
That teach at university in Scotland, so I'm going to be giving them a ring-a-ding-ding via Facebook and see how close they are to everything and see if it is doable. So,
that's cool.
Rebecca and I have been – we actually planned a trip 7 years ago and saved up all of our money and everything else, and then we ended up with a baby in her belly and it threw everything away.
That.
Yep.
That's but, you know, Scotland's not that big. So even if your friends aren't real close to Glasgow, they're you know, it's still – it's like being on one end of Indiana and wanting to go to
the
other. Is
that where
end.
The Brayhead clan is?
Yeah,
Glasgow?
They're near Glasgow.
I think he teaches at Glasgow University.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I think I'm golden.
You're close.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. I believe the clan play on in like a suburb of Glasgow. So,
perfect.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Won't have to drive. I'll be drunk the whole time. It'll be great. Shockers, hockey rock song of the week.
It's the perfect song since the home finale is this coming weekend. It is Europe, the final countdown.
Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
Woohoo! Are you ready?
Yes!
I said, are you ready?
Jason Dale!
Daddy's too hot.
I liked Peni.
That's what she said.
Hump.
First Circus.
Steven Ricker's testicles.
T-butted.
No touchy place.
Beer.
Broken penis. Vitellary Filippula.
Use your big boy words.
La 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 la.
Who's the brains in this outfit? My point exactly.
That was totally wicked!
Now Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And we're back. From the studios of WYIR in Evansville, Indiana. Shocker. Dirty D. Iceman Insights.
Oh.
Zzz, bzz, froth and grind.
Stick tap to Bill Nadeau.
The Johnny Kells segment, Skating Down Memory Lane.
The date, March 21st, 2010. That was our second AHA season.
The AHEL.
Yes. And this was titled Finish Hot, Get In, and Anything Can Happen.
Again, my wife.
I was waiting for that. So with four games left in the regular season that year, the Icemen were 16-23-3 on a 1-6 skid, and they had gone just 3-16-1 on the road to that point.
Had you bailed off the bandwagon that time, too?
Probably.
Yep.
The season concluded with three straight road games leading up to the home finale, which was also the regular season finale. The Icemen then went out, won all three road games against three different teams, no less. Then won the finale at home, 8-4 over the West Michigan Blizzard. Ryan Ford and Aaron Nafin each had a goal and three assists in that finale as the Icemen finished the season on a four-game winning streak. And that momentum carried over into the playoffs. The team won the first two games in the playoffs and eventually went on to win the Davidson Cup Championship. So there you have it. It doesn't necessarily matter how bad you are all season. As long as you get in, anything can happen.
That's it.
The thing was then, though, we knew we were going to get in because all four teams got in.
Yeah.
Now the problem is getting in.
Yeah, I don't think the ECHL is going to have five teams fold in the Eastern Conference before the end of the season.
Now, in the Western Conference, everybody gets in, but unfortunately, we're in the East. So, yeah, I think that might be something that a lot of newer fans, you know, that have found the Icemen during the Ford Center era don't fully recognize. Yeah, we won a championship, but we actually had a losing record during the regular season.
Yeah, I brought it up in the Icemen Trivia at Icemen Live that we've only had one winning season in five seasons. I mean,
the,
this is
the second CHL
and with
year.
Everyone freaking out and everything else, and with the Icemen season as it's winding down here and we're struggling, this is still, regular season-wise, the second best team we have ever had in our entire history.
Yeah.
So
we're two games over 500 right now, and I, if we don't make the playoffs, I really hope we stay at least at 500.
Yeah.
Because I think that's kind of a benchmark for tangible improvement from last year.
Definitely. Brian Patafi, Tweet of the Week.
Iceman fans can follow Iceman Athletic Trainer Brian Patafi on Twitter. His handle is BPatafi. That's BPatafie. This was during the Olympics. Ian Frazier tweeted, quote, I want to jump off of hills at high speeds, hashtag Sochi2014. And Brian Patafi's response was, quote, lots of folks wish you would. That was pretty good.
Yep, that's Brian Patafi.
On the topic of Patafi, I wanted to mention, I ran into him at the game tonight, and he mentioned that the anti-bullying program won some sort of community service award. Do you know the details about
that? I don't know the details other than
he rattled off the name of it, but I just ran into him, so I didn't write it down or anything. But
over 8,000 kids they have reached in 47 events this year.
That's awesome.
Nathan Moon has been to every one of them. Andre Bouvet-Morissette, Jason Dale did a lot of heavy lifting early on in the season. Dylan Clark's done a few of them. So just a fantastic Iceman organization thing going on there.
Yeah, that's really, really awesome. So congratulations to Patafi. And, you know, he's a great storyteller, and he's a great guy to talk to. But I think the anti-bowling program is everything you need to know about Brian Patafi.
Yep, indeed. Booster clubbing.
Tailgating, a bunch of stuff going on with the Booster Club. We're very busy these days. This Saturday, the 22nd, at 3 o'clock in the back 40 lot, the Civic Center lot, we will be tailgating prior to the Iceman home finale. We will also have a Booster Club meeting at 4 o'clock in the midst of the tailgating goodness. Folks can bring their own food, drinks, games, whatever. And then the Iceman home finale is at 7:15, so hopefully the weather cooperates. Last time I looked at the forecast, I think it's looking like 50s. And windy, which seems like every time we tailgate, it's windy. We have to batten down the hatches and try to keep tents and stuff from blowing all over the place. But at least it's looking like it's not going to be 35 and snowing, which the way this winter's been, who knows?
Yep. Man Crush be in town.
Really?
Yep. I was teasing him the other day and said, we're going to get so drunk on Friday night that we're going to have to call head coach Jeff Pyle to pick us up and drive us home.
Is he working both games?
Yeah.
Cool. That's good. Next Booster Club thing, the road trip. The Iceman Booster Club is organizing the last two games of the regular season, a road trip. You don't have to be a Booster Club member to go. We're just organizing it for everyone to try to get as many people to those last two games as possible. They would be Friday the 11th of April at Fort Wayne and Saturday the 12th at Kalamazoo. You can go to either game or both. We understand that getting to a Friday game in Fort Wayne might be a problem for people, so if anyone wants to just go up to Kalamazoo for the Saturday game, which is the season finale, you can just do that.
Yeah, what a huge game that could be. That
it
could be.
Really could be.
That could
it could be,
the,
be in win
yep,
and in.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's, and we'll find out, you know, as the next couple weeks play out, but right now, who knows? We do have a group discount ticket rate, and the info you need for that is on IcemanManiacs.com. You can order online until April 3rd using your credit card. There comes a point where we have to lock in how many people we're going to have. Fans are on their own for travel and hotel, so people can do whatever they want. If you want to stay in Fort Wayne or drive up to Kalamazoo after the game on Friday, or if you just want to drive up and back because you're crazy or whatever you want to do, people can, you know, travel and stay on their own terms, and the whole point of this is just offering discount tickets so we get people at the games to support the team on the road down the stretch. And last year did a trip to Cincinnati for those last games over in Cincy, and that was a resounding success. I think over 100 people went to that last game in Cincinnati last year, so very cool. Next thing is locker room nameplates. Hadn't talked about this in a while. We had well over 100 of the nameplates from the locker room from last season and a few from the season before that that the Iceman office had given us to sell just as an extra fundraiser. And as of last Wednesday, we had exactly 50 of them left. So to try to get rid of them during this last homestand, we put them on clearance for $1 a piece. And we were sold out by the first intermission on Friday.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so very cool. And, you know, a lot of the ones that we had left were guys that had only been in camp or had only played a handful of games with the team. So most of the name players were gone long ago at significantly more than $1 a piece. So we just wanted to unload them, and, yeah, it took like an hour to get rid of all 50 of them. So thanks to everyone who bought them.
Definitely.
All season at varying rates, and hopefully we'll get them next year. We don't know what'll happen. That was the deal where they just kind of had them lying around the igloo and they weren't sure what to do with them and offered them to Dixie to, you know, can you guys sell them? And Dixie was like, heck yeah, we can sell them. So hopefully we'll get to do that again next year. But at this point, we just don't know one way or the other.
Yep. It all depends what all happens.
Yeah.
Bench warmers.
The Booster Club got to do something pretty cool at tonight's game, Tuesday night's game. 20 club members got to sit on the Iceman bench during warm-ups, and that's a thing that's usually reserved for, you know, birthday parties and groups and sponsors and stuff like that. So the Iceman office had set aside this game as a thanks to the Booster Club, so we got to take 20 people out to the bench and sit out there during warm-ups.
Which left 45 in the crowd.
So yeah, it was really cool. You know, we went out there, got out there about 10 minutes before warm up started, and people just kind of took in the atmosphere and took some pictures down there, and then the players came out, and the next thing you knew, we were being escorted out. It was bing, bang, boom, it was over, which you're used to that.
Yep.
My favorite thing from the visit was Larry Solinger, Matt Krug's biggest fan, got to call Krug over during one of the drills where they were breaking into the zone, so the players were just kind of floating around the neutral zone. Krug was over in the vicinity of the bench, and Larry called him over and kind of like gave him a little punch on the shoulder. Krug turned toward him and for a second looked like he was going to like punch his lights out or something, you know, just joking yep. around. But Larry will never admit to this, but I think he might have peed himself yeah. a little bit.
I get tangled up with Krug every once in a while, like in the elevators and stuff. And man, I just try to go with them. Like, you don't know what you're in for.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're in for. And then I lose. So
you control of your bladder?
No. But I lose in other painful ways.
Gotcha.
Maniac Madness.
Yes, the annual March Madness Bracket Contest is now underway. The deadline to enter is Thursday before the first game in the round of 64. It is open to all fans, whether you're a Booster Club member or not. It is free to enter. You just need a Yahoo account. All the information is on the Maniac message board on IcemanManiacs.com. And when you sign up for the Maniac Madness contest, you can also play in the $1 billion challenge, which is that thing that Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway or Quicken Loans or somebody they're putting on. If you have the perfect bracket,
yeah.
which is like a 1 in 9 quadrillion chance,
yep.
not going to happen. But the real big prize that's at stake is the Power Rock 93.9 package from Steven Rickard. Steven Rickard's package.
If you want to win
Steven Rickard's package, it includes, as mentioned last week, a margarita glass, goodies from WKTG, Vera Bradley, and Harley Davidson, and the infamous inflatable pink flamingo can holder.
Had one of them waiting for me in the media box on
yes.
Friday night, laughed out loud.
He brought one for me, too, so we both got our hands on Steven's pink flamingo.
Yep, and my daughter still has it. What a nightmare.
By the way, even though he's providing the package, Steven is playing in the contest, and his entry's name is Beat My Taters. I'm not kidding.
Impressive. Hockey 101, helping Iceman fans, new and old alike, understand the game of hockey a bit better.
Yes, I want to follow up something last week. You mentioned that you thought the Ford Center boards and glass have gotten livelier lately.
Yep.
After watching more intently this weekend, I concur.
Yeah, and especially tonight, that Zamboni door got into play a couple
of
times.
Some interesting bounces, yep. yeah. So, yeah, I agree. I wasn't sure because it had been a while, and
yep.
I wasn't paying that close of attention. But, yeah, I made mental notes every time it happened this weekend, and, wow, yeah, it has gotten a lot livelier. Moving on, there are three different issues I wanted to bring up this week, and sometimes the format of this will be to answer questions people have asked. And sometimes the format will be to talk about things that have happened in home games we've just seen so that people can better understand things in context from something they've just seen happen. So first off, we'll talk a little bit about offside. A couple details about the offside rule that were on display over the last weekend. The first thing about offside is the puck must be in the offensive zone fully across the blue line in order to have a play deemed offside.
Yes.
This came into play on Friday. There was an Orlando player who was in the offensive zone, in his offensive zone. The puck was in the neutral zone. He reached back over the blue line and played the puck while it was in the neutral zone, and the play was blown dead as being offside.
Oops.
Which was incorrect.
That is incorrect.
Because, by definition, you cannot be offside if the puck is still in the neutral zone. So, yeah, that was a no-no on the Liney's part. Now, if in that case the player is in the zone and he plays the puck while it's in the neutral zone and then he pulls it into the zone, he is still onside as well because
no.
when you're in possession of the puck, you can proceed the puck into the zone if you're in
possession.
You can
proceed the puck, but I thought you said you're in the zone and then you bring it in with you. That's offsides. You have to have possession of the puck before you
enter the zone.
Yep.
So if If he's in the zone and he reaches back to play it in the neutral zone and then he pulls it into the zone, he's offside.
Yes.
But if he is in possession of it in the neutral zone and backs into the zone,
yep,
body before puck, yep, he's okay.
And I thought it was really close. I think that's what Shepke was arguing about. I think it was there in was the third one, period yeah, tonight that was really close to whether he had possession or not.
Yeah.
But linesman was in the perfect position to make the call. So,
gotcha. And then the other thing on offside is, and this is something that confuses a lot of people, I think, is how the blue line itself is classified in what zone it counts as being part of. And essentially, it depends on whether you're talking about the puck or the player. In the case of the puck, the blue line is always considered part of the zone in which the puck originates. So if you're in the neutral zone, or if the puck is in the neutral zone and it goes into the offensive zone, it's considered in the zone once it completely crosses into the white of the offensive zone.
Correct.
Therefore, the blue line is still part of the neutral zone until the puck is into the offensive zone. So this comes into play going the opposite direction, where if there's a clearing attempt or a delayed offside and the puck is coming from the offensive zone into the neutral zone, the puck is still in the zone until it completely crosses into the white of the neutral zone.
Yes, yes, there must be white between the puck and the blue line.
Right.
And that's so, the same with the goal call, too. There
right,
must be white between the puck and the red goal line.
Right. And this came into play on Sunday. There was a delayed offside on the Iceman, and the puck was coming out toward the neutral zone. It came out to the blue line. The Iceman played it while it was sitting on the blue line, and the play was blown dead as being offside, which was the correct call in that case, because the blue line, in that instance, is part of the offensive zone, and we played it before it had cleared the blue line, so it was still in the zone, therefore it was offside. And the reason why the blue line being part of the zone when the puck is in the zone, that's why the linesmen always stand in the neutral zone and not right on the line.
Yes.
Because they don't want to get in the way of a potential offside, onside situation.
Correct.
So, that's how it's handled with the puck. The player is essentially the opposite, because the blue line, with regard to the player's skates, is part of the zone in which you are not.
Explain.
I will. So, if you are going from the neutral zone to the offensive zone, the blue line is considered part of the offensive zone.
Yes.
Because one skate must remain in the neutral zone white in order to stay onside if the puck is already in the zone. And then, conversely, if you are in the zone and there's a delayed offside, you clear the zone, quote-unquote, by just making skate contact with the blue line. So in that case, the blue line is part of the neutral zone. So, essentially, the puck, the blue line is in the zone that the puck is in. With a person, the blue line is in the other zone.
Yep.
Which is kind of confusing. It's confusing for me.
And then the other key word is skate. Has to be in contact.
Right.
Because a lot of times, especially at the lower levels, you'll see kids dive or jump to get back on side.
Right.
But all they're doing is putting their skates farther away from the blue line. And so you blow it as offside. Like, oh, I don't, my hand was out. Like, it's where your skates right, are, not where your body is.
Yeah.
Or they stick. Jump. Or guys will jump on that delayed offsides, and yeah, they'll jump coming out of the zone, but it doesn't. You are offsides until your skate makes contact right, with that ice in neutral zone.
Right. Yep. And it's one of those things where you see a lot of times on a rush, like a two-on-one rush or a two-on-two or whatever, where another guy has the puck, and he's dilly-dallying around the line, making a deke right at the line, which you're always told not to do, yet they do it anyway.
Yep.
And one of his teammates realizes that he's going to be offside, so he darn near breaks his penis trying to stay on side because you have to keep that one skate in the neutral zone. Your other skate can be as far into the zone as your non-broken penis will allow it to go. But if you have that one skate that's on the wide of the neutral zone, you're good.
Indeed.
So, there you go.
Cool.
The puck is, the blue line is part of the zone in which the puck is with the player. The blue line is part of the zone you're not in.
Correct.
Which is confusing as all get out.
There you go.
And people wonder why new fans have trouble understanding offside.
Boarding.
Sunday against Florida in the first period, Peter Sakaris earned a major for boarding.
He earned it all right.
Yes, he did. That was violent. And a lot of people were surprised that he didn't get ejected as well. So
it's a good thing I had the vice president of officiating, Joe Ernst, on during the second intermission tonight.
Really?
Yep.
You got to talk about this?
Oh, yes, we did. And he thought it was the perfect call. And he said because the other player bounced right back up and was not injured, he was fine with the official just calling that as a five-minute major because the player still served the 5 minutes. The team that got checked, Florida in that instance, got the major power play, and everybody was okay. So he was fine with a game misconduct not being handed out in that situation.
Yeah. And then Sakaris and the guy that he hit fought later in the game,
the
wrong writing itself, essentially, in the classic way of hockey policing itself. But officially the rule is, it's kind of changed over the years. I think there was at one point, I swear when I was refereeing 15 years ago, I think the major carried an automatic game misconduct.
You are correct. And it still does in USA Hockey.
In USA Hockey it does.
But this is ECHL.
But in the ECHL, the boarding penalty itself can be a minor or major depending on the level of violence, and that's totally at the referee's discretion. There's really no cut and dry, you know, the guy needs to be X number of feet away from the boards or they need to be moving X speed or anything like that. So it's totally at the referee's discretion as to whether or not it's a minor or a major. Beyond that, the game misconduct is not automatic with the major in the ECHL. It is only assessed if the play results in an injury in addition to the major. So if you just board a guy and it's not that bad, it's a minor. If you board a guy and it's really bad but he's okay, it's a major. If you board a guy and it's really bad and he's hurt, it's a major plus a game misconduct. Now, the next level that kind of replaces the old boarding plus automatic game misconduct is a match penalty can be assessed if it's deemed that there was an intent to injure, whether the player actually ends up injured or not. Mm-hmm. If it is clear in the referee's eyes that you were trying to hurt the guy, even if he ends up being okay, it's a match penalty. And that is just a match penalty. There's no game misconduct on top of that, because for those that don't know what it is, a match penalty is essentially a major with an ejection.
Yes.
Because it's a five-minute power play for the opposing team that you can score as many times on. That player is ejected. And I think match penalties in the ECHL carry an automatic league review and potential suspension.
Yeah,
so
game misconduct and match penalties
automatically
automatic review. Yep.
So, yeah, that's the worst possible conclusion for the boarding penalty. And I don't think, with Sakaris's, I don't think he was trying. It was just one of those, they were flying into the zone at 100 miles an hour, and he hit him at a really bad time.
I don't know. It's hard. You never know what's going through someone's mind until you're on the ice, and then things just happen. It's just hockey. It's just the way it is. So
I tell you one thing. I was pleasantly surprised when the guy popped right back up.
Yeah.
Because when he crashed into the boards, I was like, oh, no, that's not good. It was the same thing with Hoppner going down. It was just one of the, as soon as it happens, you just cringe and hope the guy gets up. And Hoppner didn't right away, but thankfully the Florida player got back up because that was a violent collision. Yeah.
The delay of game penalty Sunday versus Florida in the second period.
Yeah.
Mike Clemente racking up penalty minute number 21.
He's a goon.
He is a goon.
Man.
He's got more penalty minutes than Donnie Harris and Josh Beaulieu.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a nice factoid.
Thank you.
Very good. Somebody's been reading his stat sheet.
I had to do Iceman trivia last night. I had to kill 2 hours with salespeople.
And Dixie.
Andy and Frazier. Yeah, it was no problem killing 2 hours with Dixie and Steven.
Yeah.
But
Ian Frazier, that's like time goes backwards.
Yeah. and an inebriated Brian Vall pretending he was Denny Lemieux.
Oh, Lord.
Yep.
You know, I recorded the show. I haven't listened to it yet.
Ah.
That makes me look forward to it more. So, anyway, Clemente earned a minor for delay a game on Sunday against Florida because he froze the puck well away from the net. And a lot of folks were upset. You know, it's the goalie. His job is to freeze the puck. Why is that a penalty? Well, because it's in the rule book.
Yeah. Surprise.
Yeah. The rule book officially says that the goalie can be penalized for stopping play, quote, outside of the goal crease area, which is kind of a vague concept, but
I don't think so.
Well, it's not the goal crease. It's the goal crease area.
I think they mean the goal crease.
There's a lot of plays that stop outside the goal crease by a foot or two.
Well, continue to read.
Right. Well, there was no question on this one, though, because he was, like, out at the hash marks. He was a long way away from the goal crease area. And he had already been warned once in that game for doing the same thing. The exact rule is 63.2 in the ECHL rulebook. It says, quote, if a goalkeeper comes out of his crease to cut down the angle on a shot, and after making the save covers the puck, this shall be legal. The key is after making a save.
Yes.
It continues, if the goalkeeper races out of his crease in an attempt to beat the attacking player to the puck, and instead of playing the puck, jumps on the puck, causing a stoppage of play, this shall be a minor penalty for delay of game.
Yep.
And that's what Clemente did, and it was the second time he had done it, and he had already been warned once. So the call was valid.
Indeed.
So there you go. So,
good call. Still can get away with it in USA Hockey.
Really?
Yep, because the area between the face-off dots, a trapezoid, if you connect the face-off dots back to the crease, mm-hmm. is considered the goaltender privileged area.
Ah, yes.
So you can get away with
it
in USA Hockey.
I remember that
USA
from my
hockey.
USA Hockey days.
Yep, but not in the ECHL and above.
So I would be curious, really, to see what they mean by the goal crease area. Because you would think
the rule book, but
if they meant only the crease, they would just say outside of the goal crease.
Well, we'll get the rule book.
Semantics.
Because there is the whole rink in the first chapter of the ECHL rule book, and everyone else's USA Hockey
there's
has the definition of what the hockey area is. The blue line and its width, and the red lines and its width, and blah blah blah. So that's
I need to check that map and see if it defines the goal.
And every
area.
Rule book also has a dictionary at the end.
Hmm. Yeah. Yep. Pending further review. Maybe we'll revisit this next show.
Upcoming games.
The final two home games are this weekend.
Final two home regular season games
the
are this
final
weekend.
Two home games are this weekend.
Sell out.
And then the last eight of the regular season are on the road, starting with three in Florida. Friday the 21st, the Icemen take on Wheeling at 7:15. It's college toga night. Any comments?
Toga! I'll believe it when I see it.
That is a big game against a fellow bubble team, although they're on one end of the bubble and we're on the other end. Last I checked on Ticketmaster, it's looking like a fairly small crowd for a Friday night.
Well, isn't this that March Madness thing?
Yeah, there's some basketball something or other going on.
We always struggle with March Madness.
Yeah.
So it is also Give Back Night, where we pay off all the charities that we've raised money for.
Oh.
So there'll be some presentations with the owner Friday night. So it'll be pretty cool.
Cool. And also, they just announced tonight that
it is also WEOA's sponsored night.
Really?
So I will have Darren Lander from WEOA on in the first intermission, and I will have the engineer Brianna in my box just yelling at me the whole entire time.
Also on Friday night, they announced that there will be a post-game auction for the Napa warm-up jerseys. Did you know anything about that? Based on your facial reaction, I'll say no.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that.
Because I think there's also an auction coming up for the Baby Blues.
After the season?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Napa warm-up jerseys will be auctioned off after the game on Friday, and partial proceeds...
Guess we won't be wearing those in the playoffs.
Partial proceeds go to the Visiting Nurse Association, which is a worthy cause. And then Saturday, the 22nd, the home finale, the Reading Royals come to town at 7:15. Fan Appreciation Night featuring the Superstars and a mini goalie stick giveaway, which is always cool. I think that's where it's like a screen-printed thing where it has all the player signatures on it, which if they have every player that's played for the Icemen this year, they may need a full-size goalie stick. And again, tailgating starts at 3 o'clock out in the back 40 lot by the Civic Center. And it should be a big crowd. I looked on Ticketmaster, and there were only a few hundred seats left in the lower bowl, and the entire upper bowl is now on sale. So should be a good crowd for the finale, and hopefully, no matter how the season ends, hopefully the home season ends with a victory on Saturday.
That'd be nice.
And then next week, three-game trip to the Sunshine State, Wednesday at Florida, Thursday at Orlando, which, as you told us earlier, is in Florida.
Yes.
And then Saturday.
Geography is hard.
Yeah. And then Saturday, also at Orlando, which is still in Florida.
What am I going to do on Friday in Orlando?
Gee.
With no work to do?
What are you going to do?
I have no idea.
Are you looking forward to it?
No.
That's a long bus ride.
That's the problem. It's 16 hours. We're only going for three games. We're gone for 8 days, and we're going for three games, but it's because it's a 16-hour bus trip. So, and we've actually thought about, as we were looking forward to this, even back as far as November, there was plans of, do we stop in Gwinnett? Do we stop in Macon, Georgia, and practice and spend the night, then drive through? Do we stop for 6 hours so that the bus driver can sleep and the guys practice and go out to lunch and hit Walmart or whatever, and then Bussy gets back up and we drive down there. So
what is the plan?
Drive it straight.
Really?
Yep.
When do you leave?
Sometime on Sunday, to be determined.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
So you leave on Sunday.
Show up. Like, if we leave Sunday at 3, we show up Monday around 7.
And then you don't play till Wednesday.
Yep. When you will we'll skate Tuesday. Practice Tuesday, pregame skate Wednesday.
Play travel to Orlando.
Then travel after the game. Thursday, we get in. So we'll get in late
Wednesday night,
early Thursday morning, unload, dry everything off, go back, pregame skate, play the game, and then the Magic are coming in. So everything has to be bundled up, moved to a different section of the arena Thursday night.
Because they play Friday night.
Because they play Friday night, and then after their game Friday night, we'll go back in, Ross, myself, Coach, and Patafi, and get everything from that other room and bring it back Friday night around midnight, 1 in the morning, set it back up for Saturday, and then pregame skate.
Yeah, and that Magic game changed the schedule because I believe it was originally Friday, Saturday.
Yep, it
in
was
Orlando,
Friday, Saturday.
And the Friday game got to move to Thursday because the Magic wanted Friday.
Everyone says it's an amazing building. Everyone says the Ford Center is awesome, but this Orlando place is just one notch better.
It's major league quality.
Well, yeah, it's 18,000.
Yeah.
So.
And it's fairly new as well.
Yep.
So, yeah.
I'm pretty excited to see it.
I wonder how far up the press box will be.
From what I've heard, it's not bad.
Really?
Yep.
Maybe between the levels.
Yeah, I think so.
Huh.
So, final thoughts.
Next show's in 2 weeks.
Yep.
We're off next week.
Take
you'll be on
break.
The road.
Yep.
And
we'll be back April 2nd.
Yeah, April 2nd, and hopefully the week after that as well.
Hit us up on Facebook. Let us know sooner than later. When are you jumping off? Are you jumping off at game number 11, game number 10? When are you jumping off of the Iceman bus and whether they will make the playoffs or not? I want to know. So.
We'll see who's the last man standing on the bandwagon.
Well, I'll be the last man standing because I really think we're still going to make it.
Do you? You honestly? You think?
I honestly do.
You think we could make it? You're saying you think we will make it?
I honestly think we will.
Really?
Now, one of the things I meant to bring up earlier is I said last week on the show that Florida didn't scare me because they had themselves a little bit of a fire sale. And then
they had a bunch of moves.
Yeah, well, they got healthy, and they picked up two D-men, the Cameron Burt kid that played fantastic.
Yeah.
And then they also picked up Rob Quitt that we've seen on three different teams this year.
Yeah.
And then they trade for Evan Bludolph, who has killed us this year. Real speedy forward out of Gwinnett. And
you ever
so
think
I
some
saw
of these players keep bouncing around just so they can play us more?
It does seem to be that way sometimes. But then the flip side, though, is like for Orlando, Kellen Tochkin has played them 11 times this season because he played them 8 times with Florida and then 3 times with us or something like that.
Man,
so
he's sick of seeing them.
Yep. Or they're sick of seeing him. So, but yeah, Florida found a way to get really healthy at the trade deadline. So, and Fort Wayne's got a crappy road trip coming up right now too. So,
yeah. Well, and they finish at home, but they're not that good at home. They're only right around 500 at home. So,
yeah, I honestly think if, it's all just a matter of when King and Beaulieu and Moon get healthy and Sakaris. So and the Guy Lepine coming back definitely settle this team down. So
let it be written in stone. You say we're in, I say we're out.
Yep, there you
go. We'll revisit these predictions at the end of the season and see who is correct.
Yep, and we'll see whether I'm riding on the bus to Kalamazoo or if I'm driving my car and you and Amanda are watching Ivy at the Kalamazoo game because after the game I'm taking her over to Detroit to spend time with my family. So that's what's on the line.
So
as you babysitting at Kalamazoo Arena.
So as you mentioned last week, you haven't made any plans yet for sitting on your brother's lawn in your underwear.
Oh, I've made plans, just a
not
date.
I see.
In fact, Ivy today just out of nowhere in the backseat of the car, said, "Dad, when you're half naked at cousin's house this summer, I'm going to be playing in the sprinkler with cousin Elise." So, there you go.
Ivy Insights.
Yeah, Ivy Insights. We'll wrap it up. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
We'll see you on the internet.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.